Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rustland, today we have, returning after far too long, BFM's very own Lee Chui Lin.
I knew you'd say that, far too long lies. Hello, everyone.
It has been, hasn't it? And we have returning music knowledge person and the editor of weekend.com, weekend without any vowels, Fikri.
Hi, Cam.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. And our three topics this week are: topic number one is heroes. Do we need them? Topic number two is the internet interface experience. And finally, topic number three is fear of missing out. And so with topic number one, heroes. I just recently, Eric Cantona, the football legend, he turned 50, which is just a few months younger than myself. And back in the 90s, back in the day, he was to me a hero. I just, you know, I enjoyed watching him play. And I when I thought of him, I realized, you know, I may have actually accumulated quite a lot of heroes and heroines, but I think we should call them heroes too in my life. And I wonder if I've done a wrong thing trying to emulate people who've done something in a moment that I then try to follow, but I know nothing about their real lives and who they really are as people. So I'm just wondering, looking for guidance here, for help.
Aren't they just the heroes that you needed at that point in time? You know, it's like, because I was just thinking, I feel like your sense of loss, you know, comes from the fact that Eric Cantona is now no longer a football hero because he doesn't do that anymore.
Oh no, he's still a hero.
Well, he's still a hero, but you know, everything exists in the past. Yeah, you know, he's still a hero because of the things that he's done, mm-hmm. not because of the things that he is doing. Yeah. And it's okay to have loved him at the point of time when he was doing those things. I think he served a purpose for you. He's, you know, he made you cool.
You know, what Lynn is saying is actually pointing to something that she and I talked about very briefly before we started recording, which is she thinks that I'm still suffering from the loss of David Bowie. So, which is hurtful.
I just think you can't deal with the abandonment. It's like you thought he would always be around and now he's gone. And I know that's hard, but like, that doesn't mean you need to discard all your heroes.
Okay. Fikri, are you a hero worshipping kind of guy?
Not really. Not. To an extent of idolizing the hero. Like I look at certain qualities of the hero, say for instance Mahatma Gandhi, you know, that there's certain qualities that I really look up to that he has. But at the same time, recently it was speculated that he has some issues.
Issues.
But that I accept as him being a human being. That's his vices. Everyone has vices. Everyone has their own set of sins that they kind of have. So that's his.
But, you know, Gandhi's issues were, in the grand scheme of things, not too terrible. But if they had been absolutely terrible, does that not smear the entire...
We're back to Lance Armstrong, aren't we?
Oh, he was never a hero of mine. How dare you, Choi?
No, not you, but for many people, they struggled mightily with the idea that Lance Armstrong was not Lance Armstrong or not the Lance Armstrong they thought he was.
That's the whole point, because people always idolize heroes, you know, when you're not supposed to idolize anything. They're just human beings at the end of the day, but, you know, certain people just kind of rile it up, hype it up too much until people have... create their own imaginations of people. So that's unfair.
And I guess especially with Lance Armstrong, he had, because he was consciously living a lie, he had created himself into a fictional character. And so he fulfilled all the hero tropes. And so people had digested that hero myth.
All hero worship is fictional though, by and large, unless you're hero worshipping somebody in your own life that you know intimately, which is not healthy. But other than that, I mean, all hero worship is fictional. You don't know who David Bowie was, you know, no, but it's true. Like, you know, you loved him because he was all these things, you know, he was ineffable. He was all these elements about him that you love. But do you actually know what David Bowie liked to have every morning for breakfast?
No, I didn't want to know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So it's all a fiction.
All right, Lynn, are you a hero person?
No.
Personality? No.
No. I had my crushes, but I think that's more hormonal than anything else. And,
So I'm in a minority here. I thought that, you know, most of mankind was sort of like...
hero worshipping?
I mean, isn't that what movies and everything are all setting us up to... We're all looking for heroes and rooting for characters and stuff. Isn't that what we do?
But I think those kind of hero engagements are kind of short term. After a while, you forget about it. Unless it affected you a lot, then yeah. But you always, I think when you're worshipping heroes and stuff like that, you need to be cautious to not let it consume, not let it be who you are.
You're really looking at me.
Because we are talking.
and also, you asked for guidance. You know, don't get defensive. All right. We're offering help. This is a safe space.
Okay. I have to say, I have made some progress, though, because...
Because David Bowie's no longer around.
Oh, well, look.
Yonder ropes, Ken.
Producer Daryl. With the Beatles, for instance. I love the Beatles. And so for me, growing up, I assumed that you have to love these things in totality. Mm. And so it came as a shock to me when quite late in life I met other Beatles fans who just didn't want to listen to the Ringo Starr songs. And they'd just say, let's just fast forward through these. And I say, but no, you can't. No, that doesn't. No, cannot. And now I've actually been able to admit to myself that I don't necessarily need to listen to, you know, all of the Ringo songs. It's really hard to say this in public. Ringo, if you're listening, I know you usually are. Don't take it personally.
I feel like this really represents some personal growth, and I'm proud of you.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
I honestly thought that I'd be talking to you know, for everyone here.
Mm.
No? I mean, what cold, heartless people you are. You don't have any.
Pretty cold. Yeah, we're pretty cold.
Yeah, I guess. No, I mean, I'm shocked. No, I've admired people for what they've done. Like, I thought Jane Goodall is amazing. You know, there are people that I think are doing amazing things. There are people I admire. Do I then kind of put them up on a pedestal in my mind and think, you are my guiding star, you are my, you know, you're my guiding light, you're my North Star? No. You know, I never had a Bowie.
Okay.
But it's not wrong anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Because, you know, you...
not patronizing at all.
No, because I had a chance to interview Tone M.
Oh, yeah.
Not to interview him personally. I was part of the team. You know, I was a camera guy.
You can say Tone M. He still exists.
And he did say that, you know, so the interviewer asked him this question, you know, who are your heroes? He said, I'm paraphrasing, of course, that his heroes were all fictional. It was all from World War One kind of books, mm-hmm. you know, fictional mm-hmm. books. So mm-hmm. one of his heroes was this, if I'm not mistaken, an American jet fighter pilot, something mm-hmm. like that.
From World War One.
Mm-hmm. So he actually said that was his hero. Mm-hmm. Then I realized that maybe heroes is the purpose of them is to set a benchmark on, you know, where your life should be. That's all, and not. Let it be your North Star and stuff like that. It's just kind of, you know, expanding your world.
Plus, okay. If they're fictional, they'll never let you down.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well...
They'll never die, Ken.
All right. Well, thank you for your help, you two. But I would just end by saying that, yes, we can be heroes just for one day.
Oh.
It's from a song, that, by the way.
I feel like it's one step forward, two steps back with you.
It's a David Bowie song. Anyway, so moving on. We move to topic number two. Which I will somehow manage to squeeze a David Bowie reference into, but it's the internet interface experience, Fikri.
Yes, so I've been thinking about this the other day. So I decided for a couple of days to just shut off all my internet kind of engagements or communications, and I felt a huge relief from this idea of speed. Or, you know, of constantly needing to be informed, by a group of friends or by the internet and stuff like that, and how my interaction with the internet is extremely addictive. For instance, the infinite scrolling
Instagram.
Instagram or whatever. Everyone's doing it now. Instagram, 9gag, Facebook. Everyone's doing it.
Specifically that infinite scrolling thing is...
Specifically, yes.
That's brand new in our lives. I mean, you know, a newspaper, thankfully, was not infinite.
Exactly. So when people were reading books, they knew where it was going to end. So they can kind of estimate the time. But with the infinite scrolling, I have no idea who the programmer is who designed this, but it's, you know...
I will feed you forever and ever and ever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
From a certain angle, you would see, oh, wow, this guy is extremely evil. What is he trying to do? But on the flip side, it solves a lot of issues for the users. But where do we draw the line then, you know? Is this healthy for the next generation, the infinite scroll? Has anyone ever done any studies on social effects of the internet and social media? I don't think so, at least not publicly. I'm sure Facebook won't do it.
You know, it's so interesting that that this is the topic, because I was just thinking about this over the weekend, that ever since my life has picked up socially, I've actually had no time for social media. It's very odd. We urge listeners, right, to like follow us on things at the end of the show. But I feel like if you were to go there right now, it's pretty barren. Like, I haven't updated anything in a good long while on Instagram. And I haven't felt the need to, because there's no need for validation from social media when my actual social life is... going well. You're
actually meeting actual human beings in the flesh,
and I have no time for you know, trying to seek out other things at the moment in a less than real space.
Yeah, but aren't you still remembering those bygone days of your when you it was just you and the Facebook?
No, I am. And so earlier, right? Like, so I've not really been on Instagram. There was a point in time where I would wake up, you know, kind of roll over, look at my alarm, and maybe idly look through Instagram, and before you know it, it's infinite scroll and it's hell, and you know, I've just been flooded by images, and I haven't been doing that. And so just now, just literally 45 minutes ago, in a moment of boredom, I opened Instagram for the first time in, I don't know, properly in 2 weeks, and I realized I could infinite scroll for 2 weeks, you know, with no boredom, and that made me feel kind of ill.
But you know, even though you are now meeting up with actual human beings,
sure,
aren't you still feeling a pressure to sell the images of those of that experience and show what a great time you're having, a wonderful, wonderful person you are?
No, that's what I mean by validation. Weirdly, it turns out when you have that validation in real life, you don't seek it from the internet. Who knew?
Yeah, right. But you can't deny the fact that the validation on the internet is actually quite sweet. You know, like, you know, when you eat sweets, you know, it's
exactly
addictive.
Like that. Yeah.
So,
but it's also empty. That's the point. You know, it's a sweet spike and then it's gone after.
So if you get like 100 likes and reposts and whatnot, that's meaningless?
Yeah.
You would feel good, but that sense of validation, I think, is that the word? Validation is short-lived.
What about people we are told are making money out of this, making a living?
And they're just making money out of it, Cam.
Well, then that's a purpose, that's a reason.
Yeah, but that's a value, that's not validation, it's different. I mean, like, does that give me validation that I'm a good person, that I have a good eye, that I'm eating good food? Not necessarily, it's just money.
But you could be one of those, what are they called? Not market leaders.
Tastemakers.
Key influencers.
Key influencers.
KOLs.
KOLs, God.
Yeah, you could be one of those. That would be validation, wouldn't it?
Would it be for you? I mean, you're new to Instagram. You could be a KOL. Let's turn it around.
Why don't we try that, like a social experiment?
What? Make me
a KOL.
KOL.
Yeah.
An Instagram KOL.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's harder than like My Fair Lady, I'm afraid.
You know, you'd be surprised at how easy it is to be a KOL.
But yeah, we're getting back to the infinite scroll. It is, my God, it is infinite.
Yeah.
And it's... I have to actually create, when it's getting late at night, I got to create, in my mind, if I see an image like this, then that'll be my cue to stop. Yeah.
Oh, so you've got a personal safe word.
Kind of. Right. If I see Prince, or if I see David Bowie, or if I see something that's actually genuinely interesting, okay, that's the last one I'm out.
But it's never really the last one, right?
Well,
you know how it is.
After you detoxed, I assume you've come back to the fold. What's it been like? Have you not come back?
I have, definitely. But, you know, it's getting back into the fold, so I'm back to square one, which is... which is what I'm trying to say, that, you know, it's okay to be kind of wishy-washy. But my main concern here is the long-term social effects or psychological effects of this technology.
To sort of like the distracted mind.
Exactly.
When
imagine the next generation growing up constantly distracted.
Mm. There are times where I look up from my phone, like if I've been walking somewhere, if I'm in motion, and I realize that firstly, I don't remember getting to this point, either on my phone or in actual space. Like, I don't know how long it's taken me to do this. And the other thing that worries me is I wonder, when was the last time I looked up from my phone, especially when I'm walking, right? Because you should. I mean, obviously, I am an accident waiting to happen. And I realize that I'm, you know, my body behavior now is so skewed to look at my phone because, heaven forbid, there's, you know, a moment of boredom, that I don't know when I'm looking up and checking and looking to see that there isn't like somebody coming at me with a knife. It's weird. Wow.
Well, I think there's this really, really cool quote I heard on this film called Fight Club by this character Tyler Durden. He said that the things you own end up owning you.
Yeah.
So we are starting to see that now with all of us, even myself.
Well, this episode is turning out to be a bit of a cry for help. but in a moment, topic number three will be Lynn's chance for a cry for help here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Lee Chui Lin, and Fikri. One name Fikri, like Sting or Madonna.
Cher.
Cher. who's like her 80th birthday the other day, wasn't it?
Prince.
Prince. Anyway.
Nice, cool thing.
topic number three, fear of missing out, Lynn.
Yeah, specifically to do with, I guess, pop culture releases this year. So the last time I was on the show, I talked about Lemonade, Beyonce's, you know, visual album. And then a little bit after that, Radiohead went and dropped their latest. And it's just kind of been a very interesting time to live in terms of new releases. And, you know, while we're talking about Infinite Scroll, there's also the fact that we live in a time where anything can happen at any moment and everyone's afraid of missing out, because it kind of felt like, you know, the minute something happens, everybody releases their reviews at the same time. Everybody releases their op-eds at the same time, the think pieces at the same time. And so it's almost like an entire raft of stuff is happening. It's never just an album. It's never just a movie. It's never just a release. It's that plus what everyone thinks about it. And it happens all at one go. And there's a question, you know, are we consuming it the right way? It used to be that an album comes out and you have to, you know, make time to like walk to the store and take money out and buy it and bring it home. And there's that sweet, sweet anticipation, you know, of putting it on and like listening to it track by track by track, as opposed to now where, yeah, it just happens all at once. I don't know.
But do people not still listen to the music? I mean, you sat down and watched.
But there's no anticipation. I mean, it's like, oh, there's anticipation because, oh, Radiohead went quiet, so we all know that that means something. And then they started releasing cryptic little clues and everyone's like, okay, next release is coming. It's not the same level, though. And the way the cycle of consumption is happening, it's almost also pushing everybody. It's almost as if everything has to be the best ever. And if you don't consume it right now, you are missing out on the best thing ever. Mm. Which is, you know, I don't know if we're able to be as thoughtful as we used to be.
Mm, yeah.
About how we consume.
Well, Fikri, you're a music guy, and I'm gonna peg you for a Radiohead guy. Once upon a time, at least.
Yeah, a couple of albums. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I mean, did that register on your timeline?
Obviously, like we're speaking about Radiohead specifically, right? Mm. About the release, I haven't heard the entire album yet.
Mm. Has anybody? I just mean in this room. I mean, has anybody actually in the whole world?
I have it, and I haven't heard it yet.
Yeah. I see. I would agree, Lynn. You know, once upon a time, I used to go down the shop and I'd buy the thing, and I still do actually. You know, make the time to listen to it one by one. I don't know if things have changed that much, because as you're talking, I'm thinking about back in the 70s, because I'm, you know, that old. I remember when the movie Grease came out, and it was queues around the block at the cinema, and if you didn't get into that cinema, you were missing out.
See, it's a different fear of missing out, though, because now I never have to miss the movie.
Oh, I see.
Because it's online, right? Like there's no physical copy that will sell out. There's no physical space I have to occupy. You know, I can just get it. Everybody can just get it. So that's the problem, because it means that everybody right this second is listening to Radiohead's recording of True Love Waits, except you loser.
Well, actually, maybe this could be the answer to the question I was asking about earlier. You know, what are the effects of social media on people?
On everyone, yeah.
On side effects. One of it could be this.
That we all feel like outsiders to it.
Unless you're sort of voraciously consuming everything that's coming out, so that, yes, you do know that Drake released Views yesterday, and yes, Radiohead, and I've heard it all. What do you want to talk about? I've heard it all, and I've read all the Guardian think pieces. I'm, you know, on the ball. And yeah, okay, you've heard it all and you've read it all, but is it the same kind of thoughtful consumption that you would have had if you had to form your own opinion, for example, if you had the time to like listen to Beyonce without someone else already telling you that it's about black feminism, for example?
Well, I remember, if I think back again to the day.
Back in the day,
and I'm thinking now of the 80s day, when, you know, let's say the new Adam and the Ants album was coming out, and that was a big deal. Adam and the Ants, say, were very London-based. So if you were not in London, you knew that you were not getting the whole experience. And I was not in London. So therefore, it was just like, I was missing out, but I was kind of... so many other people were just sort of understanding, well, we're not there, so we just get this experience. And you have to live with that. But I suppose now, I wonder if the geography is that important, because everybody's receiving it down the intertubes at the same time. They can see the video. It's all, you know, it's quite democratic, really, isn't it? Isn't that a good thing?
Yes. Well, I mean, I think what you're describing, that sense of geographical proximity being a thing, only happens with live performances now. That's all it's left to. You know, so if I don't, I might not ever be able to see this person go on a world tour because I'm just not physically there. But as for everything else, it's kind of become so much easier to be accused of being a bad fan or accused of being just not on the ball. Because I think if we had given you everything all at once back in the 80s day, and you'd been able to have done everything, I think the fandom would have just kind of voraciously consumed it all because it was all given, which is what's happening now.
But again, you have to remember that we all have choices, you know, that kind of thing can be tuned out. Actually, you can still go and watch a band at a live concert, for instance. It's still, you can still kind of control what kind of information gets to your head.
No, it's absolutely true.
I was really tempted to really listen to Radiohead's new album, but I've listened to a couple of singles. But I knew, because the album, apparently it was a very depressing album, so I needed to give it some time and find myself my own time to really listen to the album. So it was a conscious decision. And people need to remember that we can choose to switch off. That's the thing, you know, like, yeah, who cares if I'm missing out?
I have done that. I mean, the Radiohead album sits on my desktop every day.
What,
it stares
a physical
at
thing?
Me.
A physical
no,
thing?
No, no, no. On my computer desktop.
Oh, okay,
the laptop is
that's the key. Are we back in those days?
Yeah.
Is it back?
But you know, things. But no, but it physically just sits. It sits there and it just stares at me with its beady eyes going, why aren't you listening to me yet? And I haven't heard it and I don't feel that much pressure, but there's a little tinge of guilt. However, this choice, this issue of choice only works when it comes to music. But when it comes to television, God, it gets hard. I mean, I've been a couple of episodes behind Game of Thrones this season, and the fear of missing out becomes real because it's a fear of spoilers as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
there's choice and then there's, you know.
I hear you. I hear you, sister. I'm the same with the New York Review of Books. I'm like 2 months behind and it's just so hard.
You poor thing.
I know.
Can you imagine?
Okay, so we've tried to help Lynn. Have we helped you at all, Lynn? Are you?
I didn't have it, so I'm fine. If anything, I'm diagnosing the world. Look at yourself, world.
Ding,
okay. World will thank you one day.
Yes.
And now we move on to the final part of the show, recommendations, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest. I'm going to go first. And so mine is, I don't know about you, but I find myself when I'm on one of those YouTube infinite scroll type things, I tend to end up always looking at the same things. And one of the things I look at is the works of and the makings of and commentaries on Stanley Kubrick, the film director Stanley Kubrick, because I think he's just probably my number one filmmaker now. Beats David Lean. Oh my God, he was once such a hero, and I've just said it out in public. Sorry, David, but you're dead. And anyway, so I found somebody posted a documentary of the making of The Shining.
Oh my, I can't watch that film.
I haven't seen it yet.
I've seen it.
I saw the poster and I was like, no.
No, I've seen that exact documentary and I can't watch it. Is it about the... Is it kind of the multiple retellings of every single scene and deconstruction according to different?
No. This one is made by, I believe, by his wife.
Okay, I feel relief already. Right.
And it's not a no. It's not that. I think that's a different one. Mm. But this is only, it's only 35 minutes, and it's just sort of behind the scenes. Kubrick was famously private. He didn't want to be interviewed, photographed, filmed. So this is like the only document we have of Kubrick on set at work. And it was filmed by his wife, and he could hardly say no. So there's him directing Jack Nicholson, Shelley Duvall for The Shining, which is a very scary film. One of the scariest films ever, really. I mean, watching it, I was not scared at all for 1 second. But the imagery stays with you on a deeper level forever. And so this movie, which is simply called The Making of The Shining, it was sent to me on Vimeo. I don't know the difference between Vimeo and YouTube. Or
Vimeo,
whatever.
Yeah.
Vimeo, I don't know. What's the difference?
Vimeo is more catered for professionals. Oh, so like videographers and like that kind of long form documentary is more serious stuff.
Okay, that's me. That's me. It's my kind of place. And anyway, so it's really good. And that's my recommendation. Do check it out. It's wonderful to see him at work. And he was pretty difficult.
If I can just add on to that, there's a great essay by John Ronson about Stanley Kubrick, because he was allowed into his house. And he kind of got to look at how meticulously he documented everything. Like, there is a whole room in there dedicated just to Napoleon. A whole room filled with filing cabinets, filled with boxes, everything Napoleon. And the article itself is a really good read, and it's by John Ronson.
And his Napoleon project, which never happened.
Exactly, yeah.
But there's talk of it that it might yet happen, because he wrote a script and he had thousands of images that it might yet happen and be directed by the guy who directed True Detective.
Cary Fukunaga.
Yeah, so it could be good. Okay, so number two is going to be Fikri.
Okay, talking about, segueing from the fear of missing out. You know, I'm a super laggard now with music. So I just got into this hip-hop artist. His name is Kendrick Lamar. He's hugely popular. And to me, the surprising thing is he is also at the same time extremely artistic and intelligent and poetic and positive.
And political.
And political. So to me, seeing this, seeing the number of millions of hits that he's had, how can something like that exist in this kind of world? So I would like to recommend people who haven't heard Kendrick Lamar yet to check it out.
Hasn't he been around for like forever?
Kind of, but
in formal terms, yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes.
Isn't that like me saying check out Bill Haley and the Comets or something? I mean, it's like,
who's that?
No, it's like you saying check out Morrissey.
Yeah,
it's a little more recent than that.
Okay, yeah, but I'm not into hip hop. That's the thing.
Yes.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
All right.
So for a non hip hop fan,
are you like really not into hip hop? Because I'm not into hip hop.
I'm getting into it.
Yeah,
a friend introduced it to me, and I was like, oh wow, this is new.
And Kendrick Lamar is doing really interesting things musically as well. Yeah.
All right.
Sorry. I'm a bit of a laggard.
Yeah. No. I'll give him a try. But if I don't like him, I'm sorry. All right.
I think you'll like it.
All right. Well, he'll have to wait for my decision. Lynn, what's your
recommendation? Okay. It's a little bit different. I guess we've all gone a bit pop culture-y, but mine's going to
Stanley be... Stanley Kubrick. Okay.
Well, yeah. mine's going to be yoga.
Oh.
Yeah. I've recently taken it up, and it is something that I never thought I would like. In fact, it's something I actively hated. I would emerge from yoga classes full of rage and angst, as opposed to Zen Namaste. And I've recently taken it up again and love it. Life-changingly good. Really helped with kind of just my sleeping and feeling better about life as a whole. And it's something that I can do while being very bad at, but feeling very good about, which I think is a nice thing and a rare thing, to be able to do something you know you're doing poorly, but you feel so good after.
But what happened then to make it better now than it once was?
I think I came to it at the right time, but also I went to the right place. And so that's the actual recommendation, not yoga, but I do it at Manasa Yoga. So look that up. I found them really great. I like the space. They've just managed to make a convert out of somebody who has spent literally all of my adult life, ever since I could consciously think, ugh, yoga, hating it. So,
Yeah. Actually, I started yoga as well, like 5 months ago. But it's in Damansara Heights.
Yeah.
And I do agree about what she said about it. You know, like, I feel so much better with myself. You know, I feel a bit more agile to a certain extent. I mean, Sting did it. So as a guy, you know, there's this...
As a guy with one name.
You know, the boys will always say, hey, why are you doing yoga? Not my homeboys, but the other guys.
Yeah,
you know,
they were like always guys in class.
They would always comment like, oh, why do you want to do yoga? Why don't you do kickboxing or stuff like that? And I'm like, no, dude, yoga is real, man. You know, you feel it's the mind and the body working
together.
You're
both shaming me.
It's okay. I just started
because my wife loves it, and she's always saying, let's do it together. And it's like,
I've just been doing it for 2 months, and it's something that I can imagine doing for the rest of my life, which is not something you say very often. You know, to actually look at it and go, man, I could see this. You know, okay. I could see being happily bad at this for a long time.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
Wow. Okay. All right, well, I'll try the Kendrick Lamar, but, you know, baby steps.
We're both recommending yoga, come on.
Baby steps.
Okay, if Daryl goes for yoga.
Well, yeah.
A bit of culture yoga. A bit of yoga.
A bit of yoga. Yoga culture.
Right, we'll see. Anyway, so that wraps up this week's episode. And only reminds me to thank a special honored guest, our downward home dog. did I say that right? Fikri?
Yeah. Kenla.
Fear of missing out. And Lee Trinan.
Thank you.
You can get in touch with us on our Facebook page. Like us. I don't know why, but Daryl wants us to be liked. And our Instagram. Lee's is the now defunct Schmirl.
Schmirls. Did you call me Lee?
What did I say?
You said Lee's.
Lee? Oh, sorry. Lynn. Sorry. The aircon's been off in this room for like half an hour.
it's at Schmurls, S-C-H-M-U-R-L-S.
It's just gathering dust now, isn't it?
You know, my life might start sucking soon and then I'll be back desperately posting away on Instagram. In the meantime, there are lots of dog photos and travel photos to keep you entertained.
Okay. Yeah. Are you Instagram?
Yeah, finally I am. Okay. It's under my music project. It's underscore Bayangan.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's run by you. It's just you.
It's just me.
Cool.
Yeah. So it's my personal and music stuff.
All right. Twitter. Mine really is just tumbleweed blowing through that one.
What's Twitter?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, they've just expanded to like many thousand characters or something. It's going to change everything. Yeah, okay. Thank you, folks, for being here. And see you next week for another exciting episode of Bitter Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during red, white, and blue savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.